I am Larry Bell, and I am European, Coast Salish, and Hawaiian. On my Hawaiian side, I am a descendant of William Mahoe, a Hawaiian laborer to the northwest coast of North America, a man who came here, when I say here, to the northwest coast in the early 1800s, I would say around the 1840s is the sort of best guess estimate based on the information we have, and who was buried on Salt Spring Island around the year 1881. William Mahoe came here originally, from my understanding, to work at Fort Vancouver in what is now Washington, Oregon State area as a laborer, worked at the farm area there, and then would have worked in other areas such as Fort Rupert, Fort Victoria, where again he worked there as a laborer for a short period of time, up until I believe around the 1850s in that general area of time, and then had at least one daughter. His daughter was named Mariah Mahoe, and she would have been my great grandmother. The information that I'm providing now is really based on my research, and when I say my research, that really involves talking to other people, some of the people you've already mentioned, Gene Varman and Tom Koppel, etc. I'm going to ask you this. I'm not sure how far to keep on going here to rattle on for what you were looking for, I guess.
You can go to, you know, to when you feel like you're at a stopping point, and then I'll ask you another question, or, you know, so it's sort of like if you feel things flow and they're continuous, then go ahead and tell a story. But
okay, how about if I hold this thing? No?
No?
Okay. No? Okay. Gotcha. Where I'm, fortunate is that many people have done their research before I came along. I started doing my research before the whole subject of Hawaiians, the Northwest Coast, became as popular or more popular than it was. I don't mind saying that these group of people, in my estimation, are forgotten people, and little was known about their history. I always knew that I was part Hawaiian. That name Mariah Mahoe was always known to me and my family. It was known as the name Mariah Mahoe Kamahele. The last part was really unknown how to spell it. And while that name, because she was my great-grandmother, was always known, there was a certain unknownness to it, a ghost-like kind of image of, you know, who was she and what was this Hawaiian involvement about. And no one really seemed to have an understanding of it, certainly in my family's history. I was fortunate one day that my wife showed me an article in the Vancouver Sun, a major newspaper in British Columbia, and there in black and white on pages of the Vancouver Sun was my great-grandmother's name, Mariah Mahoe, with her relationship to an ancestor I didn't know by the name of Mel Cuvelier, who was a previous provincial minister of finance in the province of BC. So, you know, here I am in my probably my 30s, you know, and seeing my grandmother's, great-grandmother's name in the newspaper. And that was, I don't mind saying, quite shocking. You know, who was she, you know, to be involved in a newspaper article was quite a, you know, a surprise for me. But it did say a few things which came as a more of a surprise, that it mentioned the Hawaiian connection, and it also mentioned that she was part First Nations. So before that, I didn't know that I was part First Nations, or as you may call in the States, North American India. I didn't know that then, and it also explained the Hawaiian connection being to William Mahoe, her father, and that he was an employee of the Hudson's Bay Company. So from that article there, I don't mind saying that I became intrigued, my wife would say addicted, it's probably a better word for it, to finding out about my ancestry. And at the time, it was a challenge because there was no books written on the subject. And, you know, where did I start? And I had to start somewhere, and I did that by talking to people like Professor Gene Barman. I went to her house, and she opened her doors and showed me, you know, pictures of my grandmother, Mary Jane Fisher, and told me some stories about her, and told me stories about Mariah Mahoe, things I'd never known, and a little bit of, again, information on the Hawaiian connection. But I still had to find out more for myself, and I started doing that by reading a thesis, I contacted and visited Momi Naughton, who is a university professor at University of Western Washington, who wrote one of the first and earliest theses on the whole subject, which resulted in an article in the in Honolulu Press on the Forgotten Hawaiians, because these were indeed a group of people who were barely mentioned in history books. You know, I, like I say, I had to find out about who these people were. So I would open a book and I would explore historical tracts or novels or books on Vancouver history, Vancouver Island history, British Columbia history, Oregon history, etc. And then you would read a sentence or two about a group of people who came here. And I don't mind saying it was annoying. You know, here are these people played such, I would say, a major role on the early, I'll use the word pioneer development of Western North America. And in some major books, they deserve less than a word. And so I had to find out more. And so I did that, as I say, by talking to people. But I also became a bit of a, I would use the word activist a little bit in terms of promoting the Hawaiian history. So going backwards, I started talking to people. It was prior to Tom Koppel writing his book. But fortunately, he did write his book, and he was a great resource for me to find out about the Hawaiian connection. I was also able to talk to another lady by the name of Mally Elaine, who I think wrote one of the earliest, or maybe even the first thesis, I'll say, on the Pacific Islanders or the Hawaiians coming northwest coast. And it featured areas around Vancouver here. So again, I did research. I found out who these Hawaiians were, what their connections were to me when it came down to it. And I also became sort of promoting Hawaiian history because, again, I was angry that these people were forgotten. So I started doing that by trying to encourage ancestors of other Kanaka or Hawaiians around. We started having Hawaiian connections over in the mainland area. The first one, I think, was in Langley, and then there was one in Balcava Park, Balclava Park, in North Burnaby, Deep Cove area of Vancouver, and there was other ones that sort of forming in North Vancouver, and that was a few years ago, and I don't mind saying I've kind of walked away from that. But the concept was to get these people together so that we could meet each other, find out who we're related to, and find out our common histories, and sort of make a connection with each other and with, well, with our ancestors, as it might be. One of the more positive aspects that I've had with the promotion of Hawaiian history was that probably about 12 years ago or so, I was successful in getting a few projects off the ground by forming partnerships between different levels of government, and sometimes including First Nations people, sometimes the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, into, I'll call it signage, to notate both a sign at Kanaka Creek, which is located outside of Maple Ridge on the lower mainland of British Columbia, and signage to commemorate the Hawaiians also at Russell Island, Portland Island, and one and also on Salt Spring Island I had some involvement with. As I say, partnerships that involved either expertise and money from the governments and involvement with the wording. I'll stop there for a second because I'm rattling on here. I'll let you answer me a question.
Well, yeah, some of that I think I might want to go back to. If you hear questions about things you might already have said, it's because I just want to have a clear sentence and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So, yeah, you went through quite a lot there.
It may be too quickly.
You kind of did the outline, I think, for the interview.
Okay.
So when you go back to the first man who came from Hawaii, could you perhaps say as much as you know about him coming from Hawaii and then what he did?
Okay. I don't mind saying my knowledge of William Mahoy is almost ghost-like, and some of it comes from my heart, and some of it comes from information, and some of it comes on hope and wishes, because the information you gather, or I've gathered, you know, it isn't necessarily written in stone. You take information about a man named Cannibal Bill, written in a book by B. Hamilton on Salt Spring Island, and you accept family history as this being him, and then you get a Hudson's Bay record, and you say, it says Bill Mahoy or B. Mahoy, and you think, is this the same person? And you really don't know. You know, so, you know, some of this information I've taken is certainly written by others, but it's also, I think, based on hopes and wishes. There's no, you have to remember that there was very little information written about these people. The Hudson Bay Company may have employed someone, in this case, William Hoy, who came from Honolulu, and I've seen the church records on that, and is buried here in North America. But in terms of the Hudson Bay Company and the records, all they're going to show is his name, and that is an anglified version, his name Mahoy. They're going to show his name, what he did, how much he paid, when he started, when he left. End of story. You know, the man may have worked there for years, but you know, their purpose was not to write about William Mahoy. Their purpose was making money and collecting furs, etc. So again, you know, my knowledge is, you know, you could argue it and say it isn't true, and you would just be just as right perhaps than I am. But from what I know, you know, he was one of the it's an estimated that there may have been up to 1,000 or 500 to 1,000 workers that came from the Hudson's Bay Company, trading to the Hudson's Bay Company, to the Northwest Coast, or I guess the Peter Skane Ogden Group also should be included in there, came to the Northwest Coast in the early 1800s to probably around the 1850s, 60s. Some, like Mahoy, who came for the Bay, others came to be gold miners. He came with the Bay and went to Fort Vancouver, went to Fort Rupert, worked at Fort Victoria for a short period of time, and at least had the one daughter who I mentioned, Mariah Mahoy. He didn't leave a long footprint here. I sort of see him as a ghost-like kind of figure. I don't know if he had more than one child. One piece of information I have is that his daughter, Mariah Mahoy, there may be another daughter involved. So you get that kind of information, and I've received it from other resources, and you don't really know if it's true or not. But I expect that it is, because I expect that this man was a man. And like any other man, you know, he would have had children, and I have no reason not to believe that he had more than one child. You know, who he married, I don't know. It's greatly assumed that he married a First Nations wife, because in that era of time, there were very few white women, and indeed at that time, white women would have not had relationships with a man of dark skin. Hawaiians were not first-class citizens. They were dark-skinned people. They were on the lower social economic order of the day. You know, they could not be on the same line as England's Americans, other people of that race. Other areas that I don't know about him include, you know, his ancestry. The oral history of Mariah Mahoy, his daughter, is that the word royalty was used. And what does that word mean? And as I go on with my research, I don't know even more so. But that's the oral history that is connected to William Mahoy. And from the information that I've gotten when I've made my connections with people from Hawaii's resources, I was pointed to a connection. And I have to admit, I hesitate to say it because it's, you know, I don't know how true it is, but people told me, you know, the names of my family, my Hawaiian family, the Mahoy Ohana, were related to two individuals named Kamanawa and Kamiomoku. These were counselors to Kamehameha I. These were the two counselors who helped put Kamehameha I into power. And certainly those two individuals have a significant amount of information written about them. So, you know, I could not find out, I've never been able to find out who William Mahoy's parents were. I don't know. People have given me information and said, yes, these could be the parents of him, but then no, you're not related to these two royalty figures, Kamanawa, etc. Instead, you were related to this other connection of Mahoy family over here. You know, you know, it's a very difficult task, and is what I have to follow is my heart and what I have seen with my own eyes.
Okay. So then what do you know about your grandmother and how she
My great-grandmother.
Your great-grandmother, pardon okay. me. Your great-grandmother and how she, I don't know, not fit in, but what was her role in her community and what was her role in passing on her history?
You've asked a hard question because, you know, I am a man of my times now. You know, my great-grandmother, Mariah Mahoy, was born around 1850s. She was born in an area just outside of Victoria in the Goldstream area. And she died in the early 1900s. And I should know that exact date, but I don't have it. But lo and behold, I wasn't born then. So I don't know who this lady was. I can only make those conjectures based on people I've spoken to or on books that I've written or read, I'm sorry, such as Jean Barman's information. She was, if I look at my mother, who is where my Hawaiian connection from comes from, because I didn't know my grandmother or my great-grandmother. If I look at my mother, I think I can look at Mariah Mahoy in the same ways that had been written about her as an individual, strong character, an individual who believed in strength and endurance and working hard and being independent, an individual who believed that you had to get what you wanted, you had to work at it. And Mariah Mahoy did that. She had to do that through strong work and through survival in the best way that she knew how to. And that was through work and raising, I believe, 12 to 14 children, I somewhere in that neighborhood anyways. And by making it, you know, by having two marriages and living on an island and fishing and raising children and growing her own food, etc. Did she pass her on her history? I'd have to guesstimate. I don't know. Okay, my guesstimate is that she probably didn't know much of her own family. Also, you know, she was not. I don't believe she was literate. My guesstimate is that her father, William Mahoy, was also a man of his times. He would have worked hard, but my also guess is he played hard. You know, he lived in isolated, you know, locations, Fort Vancouver. You know, he is not a man who has shown much of himself through history. He isn't a man that I can say that owned land, that made his stamp in society, that donated property to the church, etc. So my guesstimate is that he was probably a man who liked to have fun, is my guesstimate, and liked to have relationships. So I wouldn't be surprised if he had children. I wouldn't be surprised if he had a variety of different wives, you know, at these locations.
So what of your Hawaiian heritage did you know while you were growing up?
Next to nothing, to be honest. You know, I really knew very little, but it was a name that was really whispered to me. And it was sort of a background noise. My family knew nothing about their native ancestry and very little about the Hawaiian ancestry, how that came to be. It was just really an impression. And it really wasn't until, I'm going to say 15 years ago, where this information became available by such people as Jean Barman or Momi Lininaten, etc. So in terms of being able to make this Hawaiian connection, it really hasn't been until the last few years. And that, you know, I have to thank books and, you know, internet and talking to people and going to visit there, you know, and other people are doing the same thing that I'm doing.
So why don't you talk about your advocacy for Hawaiian history?
Okay.
And try not to touch the couch or your pants. I'm sorry. I know it's very difficult, but I hear it and I'm like,
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The less noise you make, the more likely I can use it.
I can, okay.
Just think of that.
Thank you. I've forgotten the story now. In terms of advocacy, as I was saying, Sarah, my advocacy to promote Hawaiian history, shall we say, in the Northwest Coast, came about because of my I don't like the word anger; it's a bit of a strong word, but I certainly noticed that in my research about Hawaiians or Kanaka on the Northwest Coast, there was very little written about these individuals, that in books of history, there was perhaps maybe a word, maybe a sentence written about these individuals. So it became my goal at that time to try to help these forgotten Hawaiians be remembered. So that was first started by a meeting of like-minded people like myself, where we had Hawaiian connections, where other descendants of Hawaiians, Northwest Coast, people from Vancouver Island, people from Prince Rupert, people from Salt Spring Island. And I think on one meeting, some people from Hawaii came over to be part of that connection. So we would get together and we would, you know, talk story with each other, and, you know, people would step forward and tell their story about who they were and who their families were and what their memories were. And in some respect, people would go about copying this information down and recording the genealogy. In other aspects also, I would, I've spoken to interested parties at university groups or at historical groups or on cable networks to, you know, tell the public in the broadest way that I could about the history of these people with my own connection to them. One of the most meaningful and successful ways for me that I have found was through partnerships for signs or historical markers. I can say that I've been a part of three markers here in British Columbia, one at now located at St. Paul's Church on Salt Spring Island, mainly completed by the Historical Society over there. One at Kanaka Creek Park, which is located outside of Maple Ridge on the mainland in British Columbia. And a third one, which has been completed and on Russell Island, Portland Island, and I think the two islands just outside of here. So these partnerships involved myself and the expertise of park personnel, expertise of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, and for the one at Kanaka Creek Park, the involvement of the Stalo Nation just outside of Chilliwack, because that was their territory also. I guess pat myself on the back, if that's what I'm doing here, I have written small articles in the newspaper or in newsletter magazines such as for the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, etc. And I still, well, here I am right now talking to you, I guess. Okay.
So, when we were talking on the phone, you were talking about how looking at your history had changed you, mm-hmm. had changed how you thought about right. things. Not necessarily just Hawaiian, but your whole history. So could you explain, do you want to explain some of that?
In terms of how it's changed me, the knowledge of my Hawaiian ancestry, it helped explain a few things, but as you say, it also changed me. As I mentioned to you, if we were going to talking tomorrow, I don't know if I could make it because I want to go paddling. I'm a whitewater paddler. I have whitewater canoed for 20 plus years, and now I whitewater kayak. Is that part of my, is my ancestry coming through to me in that respect? Perhaps so. You know, these Hawaiians and First Nations people are certainly a water-based, a canoe-based people. So, you know, perhaps there. But the other way that it's helped me is it certainly influenced my spirituality.
Wait a second. I don't know what that is.
Foghorn.
Okay.
Or a ship's horn.
You can start with it's okay. Certainly influenced my spirituality.
You know, the knowledge of my ancestry certainly influenced my spirituality. It wasn't the easiest change for me. I was brought up as a Catholic, and I certainly have had backgrounds with Christianity. And the knowledge of my ancestry challenged those beliefs for me. I'm dancing on rough water here, so I'm a little bit hesitant, and I'm certain that, you know, people of certain philosophies are going to get down on their knees and want to pray for me after this conversation.
Don't worry. Just a second.
Yeah. No, sorry. I'm
sitting on myself. Okay, go ahead.
I had to ask myself, the connection between my ancestors and their religious beliefs to the beliefs that I was brought up with. I could not look back and say to my, you know, that my ancestors going from You know, that these people, my ancestors, were not Christians, you know, and because they weren't, I couldn't say that they were all therefore wrong, or they were all for bad, or that they were going to spend a lifetime in hell. I couldn't do that. You know, to me, they were a people of their time, and they worshipped and knew their ancestors in the way they did. So I had to sort of say to myself, gee, you know, these philosophies that I was told of in terms of, you know, hell and heaven and such like that, I had to question those. So as a result of that, you know, I've sort of taken on a greater respect and praise or worship for the gods of my ancestors. I cannot look back at them and say they were wrong. I too, when I pray, you know, I pray for my Hawaiian gods. I pray for my First Nations God, and I'll include Jesus Christ's name in there too. You know? And throughout my research, you know, I had help from my ancestors. I believe my ancestors are with me on the other side, that they are on the other side waiting for me. And these are things I didn't believe before, you know. As a, you know, I never saw that my ancestors were there to help me. Only now do I believe that, and it's as a result of me doing my genealogy and my own historical research. I look at them as being there, you know, guiding me either down that rapid or at least through my research.
Do you want to talk about Hawaii? And have you been back to Hawaii? Or have, not back, but have you been to Hawaii, and do you feel a connection with the place?
I'll go back a little bit about more of effect on me for one moment here. One of the things which I did in order to commemorate my Hawaiian ancestry and also to, to show that in a spiritual sense was by my tattoos. You know, the word tatau is a Polynesian word. Okay, so tattoos are a Polynesian, I'll use the word media, or Polynesian way of showing who you are, what you believe, and I've done that. And certainly if, you know, when I walk down the beach, young kids pull their dad's shirts and they point at me and say, basically, look at that man, Dad. And then he says to them, don't, son, look away. I'm one of those guys. I have a variety of Hawaiian tattoos, and a design which, as I understand, represents my connection to the Hawaiian gods. Okay? These are my, what is called, family aumakua. And an aumakua, as I understand it, being an individual who is deified into a god because of his or her actions. And I have my own family aumakuas, and I wear that in my skin. You asked me about my trips to Hawaii. I've only been there twice.
Can you start with, I've only been to Hawaii twice?
I've only been to Hawaii twice. And though I think we stood up here now, we could probably see it from here almost sometimes, I think. But I've only been there twice. And the first time was to the, you know, metropolitan Honolulu, where I met two Hawaiians who came to Langley to be part of the Ohana family, the family groups and meetings. And that was just, you know, I met with the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, and that was kind of your normal kind of tourist trip throughout the beaches, and also involved me doing a minimal amount of research and going to Bishop Museum. One of the highlights, though, of that trip, and as it was with the second trip too, was that going to Heiau's, being a Hawaiian temple. The first one was on the north shore of Oahu, and I believe it's called Pu'omohaku Heiau. And this Heiau is a temple, and these were all destroyed in the I think the early 1700s, early 1800s, by Hawaiian royalty, when they destroyed the taboo system was removed. And then expect this Heiau overlooks a wide valley and is tremendously beautiful, and has huge, large rocks scattered throughout the site. And this is a national park, and there are mounds of rocks and upright rocks and flat rocks, and some have scattered food or offerings. I'll use the word tea leaves wrapped with food offerings inside. So as any good tourist or person of interest, I was taking pictures of this, and I was on one side of the Heiau and my wife was on the other. And I walked over to my wife and I said to her, "Don't you feel something here? Don't you feel something? And she looked at me and she says, "Well, no," was her answer. And I started to cry, and I couldn't stop crying, and I didn't know why I was crying, but I couldn't stop it. And I walked over later on to some individuals to ask them about this place, because I wasn't really too familiar with it. And they explained that it was a Heiau of human sacrifice to the god Ku. And I don't know what happened there, but something happened. The second trip also was to another well-known Heiau, and that is on the island of the big island of Hawaii. And this was a temple that was built by King Kamehameha. And he used it, I believe it was in the shape of a whale, to help him win a battle. And I can't pronounce the name of the king that was killed there, but it too was a place of human sacrifice. But in any case, what held my presence there was the knowledge that I could go there. It was a place that you can't go there. It was a place that Hawaiians were allowed to go there and to worship. And I felt a huge amount of pride that this was a place I could say, I am allowed to be there. It is a special place for me. And as such, I was able to go on this temple and worship.
Can you just say, I was allowed to go there and non-Hawaiians are not allowed to go there?
It was a place that I was allowed to go and worship where non-Hawaiians are not allowed to go. I also remember my first day at Kona. I am darker than maybe the average person around here. It doesn't take me too long to get a tan. But I left the hotel room and walked across the street in Kona and went across the street to get some breakfast. And I'm at a market spot. And I'm going through the papayas, I think it was, and the stall vendor says, "So what island are you from?" And I said, "The big island." And he said, "Hey, welcome home." And he handed me a lei. I don't know the guy. I've been in Kona for like...
I don't know the guy.
I've been on the island for like, outside like for 15 minutes. And someone was already treating me like I live there. And that was pretty awesome. And then walking around town, people would give me the hang loose saying or speak to me I guess I'll use the word pidgin in English, and I didn't necessarily understand it, but I belonged there and I knew it. I felt, people would say to me, other people would say, welcome home. At the time, I qualified under a program called Operation Ohana. So I had a small card with me that noted that I was a registered Hawaiian. And I was able to utilize that card at a variety of different places in order to pay a cost that only locals got to pay. So again, that sort of said, this gave me a presence there. It showed me that, I have a status there, shall we say. And that also felt very proud.
Do you want to talk about what you brought?
Sure, okay, I'll do that.
If they are the plaques or whatever, then
sure.
You can read them.
Sure, okay.
You could have them. I'm going to pause. Sorry. It was on pause. Start again.
What I have here is two signs. One with the approximately 5 by 10 inches long approximately, and the colors of red, yellow, and blue, which is sort of colors of Hawaiian royalty significance. Across the top are the words Uamau ke Ioka aina I kupono. That is English, means the life of the land is perpetuated in righteousness. Those are the same words utilized in the motto by the state of Hawaii, and they were originally used, I can't remember the name of the king, but used them to, I guess, commemorate the sanctity or safety that I believe it was a British naval officer, it may have been an American naval officer, did not bomb a village in Hawaii, and they didn't do that. So in praise of that, or in thanks for that, those words were utilized by the king and is now on a state motto. But those words were recommended by me, and with the approval by the Office of Hawaiian Affairs for both signs. They also utilize in the background a taro leaf entwined with the maple leaf. The maple leaf, of course, representing the Canadian imagery, and the taro leaf representing the Hawaiian imagery. The taro leaf, the taro plant, is significant in Hawaii, not only, of course, because it provides a lot of food, but also it's utilized as a representation for family and for genealogy. So, for example, here I am in Canada, thousands of miles from Hawaii, and many generations removed from that 100% Hawaiian ancestor, but I am Hawaiian nevertheless. Like the taro plant, no matter how far you spread from the mother plant, you have many shoots that grow up and grow other plants and grow other plants. It's still the same plant. It is still comes from the same mother. We're all related. This particular plaque was utilized by at Kanaka Creek Park. It's still there now, from what I know, and it represented a partnership between the Greater Vancouver Regional District Park and the Stalo Nation, and myself and the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, who provided expertise. Here it says, Kanaka Creek is named for the Hawaiians, or Kanaka, that were employed by the Hudson's Bay Company at Fort Langley across the Fraser River. There, the Kanaka and the Stalo First Nations, wives and children, planned a major role with the workings of the fort from 1827 until 1886. And, of course, that would be Fort Langley, which was one of the first locations on the Northwest Coast to Hawaiians come to. The other plaque here is a little larger, and this is a smaller representation than the actual plaques located on the those particular locations. It also utilizes the same wording, Uamau ke Ioka aina I kupono, with the same background of taro leaves and the colors, with a blue-like wave of the ocean in the background. And it has pictured on this a background of Russell Island, Salt Spring Island, and Portland Island. Those are the three Gulf islands located between here and Vancouver mainland. And these islands were early locations preempted by Hawaiians. Most notably here being Johnny Palau, as pictured here, and William Nakauna, both preempting both his locations. And also portrays my great-grandmother Mariah Mahoy as being half First Nations and half Hawaiian. Johnny Palau and William Haumea both preempted Portland Island, which is and Russell Island, which are well-known now national parks, and through a partnership involving monies paid by the Office of Hawaiian Affairs in Hawaii. I didn't say that right. Paid by the Office of Hawaiian Affairs in Hawaii and the provincial parks. And again, through, I guess, my family, myself, this sign was designed to commemorate those Hawaiians. Not just those Hawaiians, but all Hawaiians in these locations. Neither one of these took a long time, I don't mind saying. Getting government to do something took a long time. It probably took, I'll throw out the number, 8 to 10 years to get this involvement through, not just making sure everything was done perfectly, but that there were monies in places and budget in places. I'm very appreciative to those individuals involved, and it certainly helps to show to the public that Hawaiians had a special place in these locations because, as I said earlier, they have been forgotten people.
Mm-hmm. Could you say this one more time a little slower?
I'll try to. Ua mau ke aioka aina I kapono. The life of the land is perpetuated in righteousness.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you want to share?
The last one is a bit of a sharing. I don't even know if it involves in here, but I have to laugh when I say to myself that the one plaque was involved with the assistance of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, and it's much appreciated. And it involves here a picture of Mariah Mahoy. And the Office of Hawaiian Affairs helped put funding towards this. And some time ago, they also approved myself as a registered Hawaiian. I have a card over here that was dated approximately around 12 years ago, and it says Larry Bell, a registered Hawaiian, based on the evidence of support to showing the Hawaiian ancestry as to Mariah Mahoy. And like any other good government goes, they go and change their mind to change their policies. And as a result of that, the program where I was once a registered Hawaiian, I no longer am now, because it seems to me that the Office of Hawaiian Affairs have either changed their policy or lost the material that had been sent to them. You know, I am still the same person I was 12 years ago. I still have the same documents, but lo and behold, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs have gone and changed their policy, even though they've helped to expend money on a sign that states that my ancestor is part Hawaiian, and they provided the support for, you know, their own information doesn't seem to be perhaps worthy. I don't know. I find it very humorous and sad. Okay? I am still the same person, but today I'm not a registered Hawaiian under the current program.
Anything else? Or are you?
Can I just look at my notes for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. In terms of, I asked myself, who would I want to speak to have them know about these people? And I guess I'd like to speak to everyone, because unfortunately, we as a group, as a society, I think in general have forgotten our past. We accept who we are today. We get by our daily lives, pay our credit cards, and try to get to work on time and raise children, not realizing that there is a past here, that people have come here or may already be here and tried and have a presence here and a place here. And indeed, if it wasn't for those people, we wouldn't be here today. And in these cases, as I say, it still bothers me, it still angers me to some extent, that these Hawaiians are a forgotten group of people. Sure, they're known right now in the space of time, and you're an example that you're here recording, but in a few years from now, will this be another dead subject, another forgotten group of people? And I you know, still I feel these people should be thanked for having brought themselves here and given us today for what we have.